This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Mueller report on the way. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, April 10. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Attorney General William Barr says the redacted report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller will be released within a week, meeting his initial deadline.
The Trump administration is reportedly debating whether to give migrant parents a choice about family separation as asylum cases are reviewed.
Federal investigators say they've uncovered a massive Medicare scheme that targeted the elderly and disabled with back and knee braces they didn't need.
And managers trying to figure out the approach by newly hired young adults.
Very often they were having this awkward experience where an employee who had been on the job for a year would come in and say, well, I've been on the job for a year. And the boss would say, yes. And then they'd ask for, you know, what's my next job or when am I going to get promoted or get a raise?
Wall Street Journal writer Sue Schellenbarger on office rookies who ask for the world. She's here in about 20 minutes. In less than a week, Attorney General William Barr says he'll give Congress the special counsel's report on Russian interference in the 2016 election. He also told lawmakers yesterday on Capitol Hill that he would explain his reasons for redactions in the roughly 400-page document. Mr. Barr was pressed about the question of President Trump being exonerated.
It's hard to have that discussion without the contents of the report, isn't it? And that's why I'm suggesting that we wait until the report is out, and I'm glad to talk to people about it after then, and I'm already scheduled to testify about that.
Democrats have criticized Mr. Barr's approach, saying they want to see the complete conclusions of a probe that lasted nearly 2 years. They've also threatened to issue a subpoena for the full report if their demands are not met. Mr. Barr noted that many of the regulations Mr. Mueller operated under were developed after Democratic outrage from a prior investigation. The Ken Starr probe into allegations that President Clinton committed impeachable offenses by lying about an affair with an intern. It's not clear whether Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin will turn over President Trump's tax returns, documents requested by House Democrats, but he said that his department intended to follow the law. In testimony yesterday, Mr. Mnuchin also pushed back against suggestions that Mr. Trump hadn't been transparent, saying the president has complied with financial disclosure laws and was not required to voluntarily release his returns.
I believe that the communication between our legal department and the White House General Counsel was informational, that we obviously had read in the press that we were expecting this.
He's echoing a message from other administration officials who've said voters elected Mr. Trump without his tax returns being released. He also suggested Democrats were pursuing the returns for political purposes. The chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, Massachusetts Democrat Congressman Richard Neal, formally requested last week that the IRS turn over Mr. Trump's IRS filings. The Wall Street Journal says the White House is debating whether to give migrant parents at the southern border a choice of being voluntarily separated from their children while they are jailed as they wait for a judge's ruling on their asylum case, or waiving their rights and agreeing to be jailed together. This is part of President Trump wanting, as he says, a tougher direction on immigration. But what does a tougher direction mean? And does the president have new options following the resignation of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen? More from John Fritzy, White House correspondent at USA Today. John, what about the options?
I actually think that Trump's options are relatively limited here. I think that he can put new leadership in place in DHS. He'll obviously have to do that. And if he put sort of a more hardliner immigration person in there, that would certainly send a message. But in terms of policy, it's somewhat limited. You know, there's a lot of discussion about beginning the family separation policy again, the zero tolerance policy at the border. But you know, there's an outstanding court ruling from San Diego that has basically blocked them from doing that. So I think that's somewhat limited. Trump has talked about sealing the border. But, you know, as there's been a lot of reporting, there's real economic consequences that could potentially come from that. So I think he has some options, but I also think he's a little bit hemmed in by the law.
Yeah. From a policy standpoint, the separation of families just doesn't seem to be a deterrent, is it? I think some of these folks are so desperate to escape their countries that they'll do anything.
I think there are folks inside the Trump administration that feel like that was the best deterrent, that they feel like had that policy gone on a little bit more that it would have stopped people. But I think you're right that the data didn't really reflect that the first go around. And, you know, honestly, the pushback on that, not just from Democrats, but from Republicans and Trump allies, was pretty significant. So, again, I mean, I think Trump has to do something at the border because it's what he's mostly talked about, and I think they want to do some sort of a big push. But my sense is that they haven't quite figured out what that is yet, and I suspect that the biggest thing we're talking about right now is going to be a change in leadership at DHS. In other words, there'll be a lot of focus and emphasis on who replaces Secretary Nielsen at that department.
We're speaking with John Fritzy, White House correspondent at USA Today, and he's written a piece entitled "After Nielsen, or the Nielsen Resignation, Rather, What Does Trump's Tougher Direction Immigration Plan Look Like?" And largely, that person is likely to get confirmed, given the Republican majority in the Senate.
I think it's an open question. I mean, I think probably, but you know, it depends a lot on who they put in, obviously, and it's just not clear to me yet. I mean, I've heard all sorts of names. You know, Stephen Miller comes up, one of the president's closest advisors on immigration. I think that's probably pretty unlikely. There are a few deputy types hanging around there, but you know, a thing that's interesting about this White House is that they're so thinly staffed at the department level, and particularly at the subsecretary level, that it's hard to find people to pull from. So I think, you know, I think it remains to be seen, obviously, who he's going to pick. There's a lot of names floating out. White House is getting a lot of advice, but again, I just feel like there's a little bit of a you know, big policy idea meets reality here, and I think it's a real challenge for them to try to figure out what they're going to do, because so far they've made a lot of these threats and they've either had to back down or they've been struck down in court. Just this week we have a court ruling on Signature Initiative, which is the asylum situation where they are having people who are applying for asylum stay in Mexico while those claims get processed. The idea being the Trump administration feels like people are applying for asylum and then they sort of disappear, right? They get released into the country. They never show up for their hearing. They're gone. And they're trying to do something about that. But that effort was shot down in court, too. And so I think that they're really running into a wall here in terms of, so to speak, in terms of what they have to, what they can get done on the border.
Thanks, John. John Fritzy, White House correspondent at USA Today. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well at Gordon Deal. 14 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Glad you're with us. Both men are declaring victory in the race for Israeli Prime Minister. Incumbent Benjamin Netanyahu and his main challenger, former Army Chief Benny Gantz, were locked in a neck-and-neck race yesterday. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Exit polls showed no clear winner in an election that was seen as a referendum on Mr. Netanyahu's lengthy public service. Early indications were that Mr. Netanyahu suffered a setback by failing to score a decisive victory. USA Today says Israeli exit polls are notoriously imprecise, meaning final results could swing either way. Two Israeli TV stations showed Mr. Gantz's Blue and White Party with a narrow lead over the Likud Party, yet two of the polls give the Likud the upper hand in being able to form a parliamentary coalition. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. With 97% of the votes counted, Mr. Netanyahu's Likud party and Mr. Gantz's Blue and White party both look to secure about 35 seats, with Mr. Netanyahu's right religious bloc on track to secure a majority of 65 seats in Israel's 120-seat parliament. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, Attorney General William Barr is headed back to Capitol Hill today after telling House lawmakers that he expects to release a redacted version of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report within a week. New York Democratic Congressman Jose Serrano is looking for more information.
The American people have been left with many unanswered questions, serious concerns about the process by which you formulated your letter, and uncertainty about when we can expect to see the full report.
Barr says his redactions will be color-coded and accompanied by notes explaining his decision to withhold information. Two dozen people, including doctors and owners of medical equipment companies, have been charged in a more than $1 billion Medicare scam. Federal prosecutors say the plot targeted elderly and disabled people by setting them up with back, neck, and knee braces they didn't need. The medical brace manufacturers allegedly paid kickbacks and bribes to doctors working with fraudulent telemedicine companies in exchange for Medicare patient referrals for medically unnecessary braces. The gains were then laundered through international shell companies and used to buy exotic cars, yachts, and luxury real estate in the U.S. and overseas. New York City officials have declared a public health emergency designed to halt the spread of measles. Rockland County Executive Ed Day says the city has ordered mandatory measles, mumps, rubella vaccinations and fines for noncompliance in certain parts of Brooklyn.
With 3 in 10, 72.9% of those from ages 1 to 18 in Rockland not vaccinated, it is an emergency.
The move is the first time the city has imposed mandatory vaccinations. A stunning announcement from the NBA. Magic Johnson abruptly quit as the Los Angeles Lakers president of basketball operations last night, citing his desire to return to a simpler life.
I got a great life. I was like, damn, I got a great life outside of this. What am I doing? You know, I got a beautiful life. So I'm going to go back to that beautiful life. And I'm looking forward to it.
Johnson didn't tell owner Jeannie Buss or general manager Rob Pelinka about his shocking decision before he announced it in front of reporters about 90 minutes before the final game of the Lakers' sixth consecutive losing season.
What? Just told reporters before the game?
Yeah.
And didn't tell anybody else?
Nope.
That is some strange management there by Magic. Well, par for the course. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. More than 75% of Gen Z members believe they should be promoted in their first year on the job. Employers see similar patterns among younger millennials in their late 20s and early 30s. Sue Schellenberger, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says the trend has managers scrambling to figure out young employees' expectations without driving them out the door. Sue, what's this about?
This spring, from interviews I've been doing with managers on other topics, and very often they were having this awkward experience where an employee who had been on the job for a year would come in and say, well, I've been on the job for a year, and the boss would say, yes, and then they'd ask for, you know, what's my next job, or when am I going to get promoted or get a raise. Young employees today do tend to be promoted more quickly, I think, than generations did in the past. They also expect to have jobs that make an impact, and they expect to get raises very quickly. This is putting managers in kind of an awkward position in some cases.
You know, you use that word expect twice there in your last sentence. So is this a group that's just ambitious, or are they feeling entitled just because it's a one-year anniversary, for example?
The ones I encountered for this story were realistic. They weren't going to get something for nothing. But I think what they miss is that they're out of academia. There are no more predictable advancement. Companies and industries vary very widely in how quickly they promote new hires. It can be, you know, as little as 6 months to 2 to 5 years. And employees can't know this necessarily going in. They really need to do their homework. But the ones I interviewed wanted very much to have an impact. One young woman stuck with her employer in her 20s for 6 years, but she said she did it because her bosses were constantly asking her, what would you like to do next? What would you like to do next? And giving her an opportunity to train on yet another position and learn new skills.
We're speaking with Sue Schellenberger, Wall Street Journal columnist. Her piece is called The Office Rookies Who Ask for the World. I thought it was interesting. Maybe one or two of the managers in your story
adapted to this approach from these young folks just looking for more or feeling entitled to more, if I can use that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And they then began to sort of outline specifics, right? Here's what it would take to get to B from
exactly.
point A.
Exactly. The employers are actually shaping very specific career paths for each entry-level job to show new hires what they can logically expect. They tell them most people get promoted after 2 years. Some companies, it's up or out. If you don't get promoted after 2 years at some of the professional firms and the investment banks, you're out. And they also give the employees lots of feedback about whether they've reached those targets necessary for that particular assignment. So it's not so much that the employees are insisting on something for nothing. They just want to know, how are they doing? It's more a desire for feedback almost.
All right, so what's the guidance here then? Because I know you broke it out sort of saying, here's how you avoid the entitlement trap.
Absolutely. I think you really need to research the company you're joining and find out how quickly do people get promoted.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. In today's age, it can be hard to find the time to sit down and learn more. It's not easy when social media can be so addictive, right? So you may think you don't have the time to read a book or develop yourself. If that's the case, there's an app I highly recommend. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that identifies the key takeaways, the need-to-know info from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them into about 15 minutes so you can read or listen. I like Blinkist because it has a massive and growing library from self-help and business to health and history books. I can indulge in the topics I want without having to read the entire book. When time is hard to find, find Blinkist. Perfect for your commute. Always wanted the skinny on the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People? Blinkist is for you. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. Blinkist.com/morning.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, April 10. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The Attorney General says the Mueller report will be out within a week. Fox News says the AG will investigate the origins of the FBI's counterintelligence investigation into the Trump campaign. Report says migrant families may get a choice about how they're jailed. Up to 2 feet of snow could fall in parts of the western and central U.S. A Las Vegas guy won a record $110,000 last night in a single episode of Jeopardy. And the 7-Eleven thief that caught a generous break. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Dell Small Business Advisors can help you maximize this year's budget and find the right business PC with 8th Gen Intel Core processors. Call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL. The 737 MAX aircraft is a legacy of its past. Built on decades-old systems, many that date back to the original version, the strategy to keep updating the plane rather than starting from scratch offered competitive advantages. Pilots were comfortable flying it, while airlines didn't have to invest in costly new training for their pilots and mechanics. For Boeing, it was also faster and cheaper to redesign and recertify than starting anew. But New York Times reporter Jack Nickus says the strategy has now left the company in crisis. Jack, what did you look at?
We took a deeper look at the 737 MAX, which is the newest passenger jet in the market, and of course has been in the news as of late because it is the plane that was involved in two fatal crashes in less than 5 months recently, which killed 346 people. And there has been increasing scrutiny on the design of the plane and particularly a flight control system that investigators believe may have played a central role in the crashes. So we took a look at the longer history of the 737 program at Boeing, and how Boeing's decision to develop the 737 MAX followed sort of a playbook of decades of really just iterating a 1960s aircraft versus really starting from scratch.
Yeah, and I think you pointed out in 2011, right, 8 years ago at this point, Boeing actually questioned if the 737 design actually had run its course.
That's correct. So, in 2011 or so, at that point, the plane was, more than 40 years old, or at least the original design of the 737 was, and they had already created, they'd already redesigned it three times and put new engines on it, et cetera. And so they were, really hoping to make a new single-aisle aircraft and basically start from scratch and be able to incorporate many of the technological advances that had happened in aviation over the past several decades. But there were competitive pressures. Airbus, the other main rival in the aerospace industry, decided to re-engine its A320, which is the 737 competitor, and that pushed Boeing to make a decision to do the same with the 737. So rather than start anew and create a new aircraft, basically slap on some new engines and make it fly. Now, this meant that, putting new engines is a big change to an aircraft. And the design, when you reiterate or redesign an old model, is you try to keep it flying like its predecessors. And so to do that, because of the new engines, it handled a little bit differently. And in some cases, the test pilots were finding that the plane was, pitching up or the nose was getting too high in certain flight maneuvers. And so they created this flight control system called MCAS that essentially, when data suggested the nose was getting too high, the flight control system would move the tail to push the nose back down. And that is what investigators believe is a malfunctioning version of that system is what may have led to these crashes.
We're speaking with Jack Nickus, reporter at the New York Times. He's written a piece entitled Boeing's 737 MAX, 1960s Design, 1990s Computing Power, and Paper Manuals. One of the things that stood out to me in your story was the point that airlines don't want pilots to have to train on a new system.
Right. That's one of the advantages of redesigning an old aircraft is essentially you can seamlessly blend it into your fleet. You do not need to spend lots of money retraining your pilots or even your mechanics at learning a new aircraft. And so Southwest Airlines, for instance, they only fly 737s, and this has been part of their business model of simplicity and low cost because all the pilots learn how to fly one type of airplane. So if Boeing were to come out with a new single-aisle aircraft, that would be bad for an airline like Southwest because they've invested so much in keeping their pilots up to date on the 737. So when they came out with a new 737 MAX, this version with the new engines, the mandate for the engineers at Boeing who were building the plane was limit changes on the aircraft to make sure that regulators weren't going to require new pilot training. And so that led to, essentially many kind of makeshift solutions or workarounds like this MCAS system to make this plane fly just like its predecessors. And, one interesting example is they put new, beautiful high-definition screens in the cockpit. But instead of, redesigning how the flight data is presented to the pilots in a new way, like you would on a new car, they basically just recreated the decades-old gauges on the digital screen because that's what pilots knew.
Thanks, Jack. New York Times reporter Jack Nickus. By the way, the business impact is real for Boeing, which says it didn't book any commercial orders for its 737 jetliner in March, the first month without a sale of its best-selling aircraft in almost 7 years. It's 19 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, in case you need another reason to keep your tech devices away from your young children, let this funny story serve as a cautionary tale. Evan Osnos, a staff writer at The New Yorker, tweeted a cry for help over the weekend. It seems his 3-year-old got a hold of his iPad and tried repeatedly to unlock it without success. What Osnos found when he got his hands back on his device was a mind-blowing message that read, iPad is disabled. Try again in 25,536,442 minutes. Now, before you try to do the math there, Gordon, that's more than 48 years. Oof. So Osnos will get to use his iPad again sometime in 2067. The iPad lockout is a security feature of Apple devices that kicks in whenever someone repeatedly types the wrong password. The more times an incorrect password is entered, the longer the lockout time grows. Many users responded to Osnos' plea for help with ideas, some helpful, some not so much. One suggested putting the iPad in a bag of rice. While another thought that time travel might be his best option. In the end, after some trial and error, Osnos tweeted yesterday that he managed to get the iPad into a firmware update mode and was finally in the process of restoring it. No word on whether he was also in the process of sharing his password with his toddler.
Well, I didn't even think it could go that high, like push you out that far. Those calculations just... seems so literal by the machine.
I've heard someone say that, you know, if you put the incorrect password in your iPhone, I don't know, 20 times or something like that, you can get locked out for like a year or something like that. Like, I've heard that. I've never heard it go up to 25 million minutes before.
Can you imagine just like in 2067, right, 48 years from now, what the iPad or what technology would even be like? We wouldn't even have these devices. We'll just have chips in our brain that automatically calculate whatever we think or dream up.
We'll be using our iPads for coasters in 2067. And it's time, Gordon, to revisit one of our favorite stories from the past month or so for an update. You'll remember we told you a little while back about the Army veteran from Ohio named Dell Hall. Dell, who works at a craft beer company, decided that for Lent he was going to give up everything except for beer. Hall says he was following the lead of the monks in the 1600s who would fast during the season with a Bock beer diet, which would function essentially as liquid bread. After checking with his doctor first, Hall started that all-beer diet on Ash Wednesday, and now more than 30 days in, he's had some dramatic results. According to his latest video weigh-in on YouTube, he's lost more than 30 pounds, 34 to be exact, at last check. He's also been updating his progress on social media. Over the weekend, he tweeted, "I feel like I'm in my 20s again." He also said in an interview that while the beer diet is going well, he still does think a lot about food, especially in his dreams.
Yeah, salty pretzels, I would imagine. I thought that, I mean, I understand you can go for without water for like 7 days, food for like 3 weeks, I thought.
Right.
So is there enough? And a serious question, is there enough like food-based things in the beer that allows him to stay reasonably healthy, I guess?
I guess there's nutrients in there. I guess the wheat acts, like you said, as liquid bread. Yeah, it's the same as eating kind of an all-bread diet. And he does drink water along with it, so he keeps hydrated as well.
But it's like everything's pureed almost in the way he's approaching this.
I think he could have black coffee, too, which would be key, because I couldn't go anywhere near this without a lot of coffee.
That's remarkable. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Around here, everyone knows you need the right tool for the job. It's the difference between orders filled and orders missed, between return customers and product returns. That's why I order from Grainger. With over 250 local branches, will call product pickup, and a time-saving mobile app, it's easy to get it right. When it comes to getting what you need, when you need it, Grainger's got your back. Call, clickgrainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Wednesday. You've seen it. I've seen it. Prices at the gas pump are rising. The issue? Maintenance work at refineries is squeezing supply. AAA says the national gas price average increased 5 cents to $2.74 a gallon this week and is 8 cents more than the same time last year. The rate is 28 cents higher versus a month ago. USA Today says refinery maintenance, both planned and unexpected, is largely to blame. California, Arizona, and Alaska experienced the highest week-over-week increases between 14 and 18 cents. The cheapest gas states are largely concentrated in the Deep South. Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, all at around $2.45 a gallon. The gas price outlook, West Coast, inventory could fall even further, putting pressure on prices. The Rockies, if inventories don't recover, prices could hit $3 a gallon. And the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, the region is benefiting from a year-over-year surplus that could grow as refinery utilization, as they say, continues to steadily rise. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Foreign Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says his department intends to follow the law and is reviewing a request by a top House Democrat to provide President Trump's tax returns to lawmakers. But in Capitol Hill appearances yesterday, Mnuchin dodged questions over whether he would comply with the request to supply the returns by Wednesday. He clashed with Congresswoman Maxine Waters of California.
You're not afraid that you will be fired if, in fact, you release the returns.
Well, I, I'm not afraid of being fired at all.
Mnuchin also said he has not promised to authorize the IRS to supply the returns. Benjamin Netanyahu appears to be headed toward a historic fifth term as Israel's prime minister, with close to complete unofficial election results, giving his right-wing Likud and other nationalist and religious parties a solid majority in parliament. The outcome affirms Israel's continued tilt to the right and further dims hopes of a negotiated solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Re-election will also give Netanyahu a boost as he braces for the likelihood of criminal charges in a series of corruption scandals. The State Department will use a new indicator to flag the risk of kidnapping in high-threat countries in an effort to reduce incidents overseas. Travel advisories will now be listed with a K label to communicate the risks of travel more clearly. 35 countries have been identified using the new indicator, including many in Africa and the Middle East, along with the Philippines, Russia, and Turkey. It was a night of tears and tributes in the NBA as two of the all-time greats played the last home games of their careers. In Dallas, Dirk Nowitzki notched season highs in points, shots, and minutes before telling Mavs fans his record 21st season with the same franchise would be his last.
I put you guys on a hell of a ride with a lot of ups and downs, and you guys always stuck with me and supported me, so I appreciate it. And
in Miami, Dwayne Wade scored 30 points in the final home game of his career. Despite a 122-99 win over the Sixers, Miami was eliminated from playoff contention when Detroit beat Memphis.
Two professionals who, in your mind, get the Good Guy Award.
They absolutely do. Lots of charity, lots of good stuff.
Dirk and D. Wade.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. A would-be 7-Eleven thief was caught before he stole anything, but he still got the items he was planning to take, thanks to the owner of the convenience store. He said he spotted the almost shoplifter trying to take food from his business in Toledo, Ohio. He noticed the teen on surveillance cameras before confronting him. But Jay Singh, who's owned the store for about 5 years, said he was shocked by the encounter over the weekend in which the wannabe thief said he was stealing for himself because he was hungry. Mr. Singh told WTVG Television in Toledo that he decided not to involve law enforcement. Instead, he chose to help the hungry teenager. A customer at the 7-Eleven posted the story on Facebook, where it gained traction. He wrote that while at the store, the teen was pocketing munchies, food that Mr. Singh said is not food, before proceeding to give him real food. Mr. Singh gave the teenager sausage, pizza, and chicken, according to the post, then gave him $10. So he knows, quote, someone cares. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.